Now, here are more news and views with Chuck Bates.
And Chuck is on assignment. I'm Ron Allen. It's Friday afternoon, news and views. So good to have you as we prepare to observe on Sunday, Veterans Day 2012. And in keeping with that, after having just spoken with Captain Eugene Red McDaniel, we go to Dr. Ord Elliott, author of The Warrior Silence. Let me hold it up in front of our cameras here. We have cameras also on our radio program. The book is called The Warrior Silence. As a Princeton grad, Marine Rifle Platoon Commander in Vietnam, Ph.D. in Management, Ord Elliott writes from an unusual perspective, 40 years experience as a management consultant. Dr. Elliott, welcome to News and Views, sir.
Pleasure to be here, Ron.
You've advised some of the largest U.S. corporations. You've authored several books. However, you've now turned your attention to a problem of major proportion in the U.S., that is, the return to civilian life in the marketplace of military veterans. Why the paradigm shift?
Well, it's not really a shift. It's something that I've dealt with all my life. You carry combat with you, and in particular, when Iraq and Afghanistan started, I was disturbed at the number of veterans that were coming back with PTSD and the suicide rate that has increased. And I was prompted to gather my thoughts and some of the writings I'd done decades ago about myself and put something out.
Let me set the stage here for something. My father-in-law and his brother-in-law, our uncle, both fought in the South Pacific in all of the hot spots, from Iniwikak Atoll. They went through Guam. They went, you name it, they were there. They were in the jungles. And when they came back, they never said a word about what they had done. They didn't ever say they couldn't talk about it. It was persona non grata. There was no conversation about it. They never did. My father-in-law went to heaven about 5 or 6 years ago with his stories still in him. And I see that what you've done with this book, The Warrior Silence, and I finished reading it last night, I couldn't put it down, you have debriefed yourself, which I think is probably the most important thing you could have ever done. It's been years, 30-some-odd years, since you were in the combat zone, and yet, from what I'm gathering, not only with you, but with other returning veterans also, those experiences never seem to die. Is that accurate, sir?
Well, it's true. It has changed for me somewhat. I mean, when I first came back from Vietnam, I couldn't walk for several years. I couldn't walk down the street without looking for an ambush, even though it wasn't the jungle. So is it around the corner? Are there snipers on top of a building? And I had the same nightmare. It stopped about 3 years ago. The same nightmare. Not every night, but over and over again. So that doesn't leave you. And certainly kind of the sadness and loss of my fellow Marines back at that time is only amplified as I hear and see about the young troops that are also being wounded and dying.
I notice your story about your friend Dave, and I've marked so many parts of your book that it would take us 4 hours to even get close. But some of the important stories, the loss of Dave, was Dave the first of your close friends, the first people you knew that was killed right there in your presence? Was that the first major experience you had?
That was a turning point for me. We were college friends, and we were, you know, I was fortunate to have him in my company when I got to Vietnam. He was a year older and had been there and was, you know, in many ways a mentor. And I think helped me stay alive by the tips that he gave me. And, of course, I lost some Marines in my platoon before then, but having this close friend die right in front of me was in many ways a turning point in my life. I when I went to war, like a lot of young troopers today, I had sort of a John Wayne romantic notion of the warrior, and this ugliness of combat and your comrades dropping around you is it changes you. It just changes you.
And not just dropping like you see in the movies, but being torn apart and obliterated as they died around you. If you would, on a lighter note, and it's hard to do that, but on a lighter note, would you share your experience with John Wayne in the distance? I got a kick out of that.
We had been, this was 1967, we had been, my battalion, I'd been there January, I'd been in Vietnam about a month and a half, and We've been in a couple of firefights and battles, and we came back to Okinawa because we were going to retrain, refit, and they would put us on board a Navy ship offshore as a ready force. So that's what we were doing. So we were training in kind of the jungle areas, jungle training, and we're in a helicopter, and we're hovering around, and there was this hill. It was open, and there was a big film crew there, and they were doing some, obviously, movie thing. And I found out right after that they were filming Green Beret, and that was John Wayne right down below us.
And you,
I thought it was just so ironic that, you know, we've been in the real war, and then there's this movie about it. Can capture. Hello?
Yes, I think we're all right. Oh,
can capture what's really going on.
I believe you're getting a call through your phone, sir. I think that is that what that that ringing noise is. One of the stories you build up to Sergeant Mack, who apparently was one of those incredible veterans that was just not just gung ho, but certainly a man that that understood war. He lived it, and then a few pages later, Sergeant Mack was gone, and he was men like that were really the backbone of your operation, weren't they? I know your leadership, being a platoon commander. I served with the 1st Marines as a hospital corpsman, and understand the structure and the second lieutenants that ran the show in the field. But you really depended on people like Sergeant Mack, didn't you? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Doctor, if you would you please call us back? I think the call coming into you. And it cut us off. If you would, just give us a call, 901-767-2736. You've got the number. All right. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Elliott's book. It's called The Warrior's Silence. And as I mentioned a few moments ago in our conversation, that we were talking about people going to combat, men and women going to combat, and then coming back. And if you have a relative, or perhaps you were one of the people that in World War II had the opportunity to serve your country in combat and came back. And I don't know that I have ever talked to anybody that had that type of situation that they're able to talk openly and freely about it. But we're talking to Dr. Ord Elliott, who has written a book, and he was a lieutenant, second lieutenant, platoon commander in Vietnam in combat for several years. And we're talking about his book, The Warrior's Silence. And to some degree, it is probably purgative for Dr. Elliott. Dr. Elliott, you were in the middle of sharing some ideas. I was mentioning Sergeant Mack as being the backbone of companies like yours that went into combat. Is that accurate, sir?
Absolutely. Again, as my platoon sergeant. And, you know, in Vietnam, because we escalated the war so quickly and brought in so many new troops with the draft and everything like that, there was a lot of inexperience. I mean, I had squad leaders who'd been there 8 months instead of, you know, 10 or 12 years. And mm-hmm. Sergeant Mack was in his mid-30s and was an experienced platoon sergeant. And I relied on him tremendously, particularly early on, to just get a feel of what it's like to have the troops to be in combat, to send out patrols, how to be with your troops, how to work with them, how to be a good leader.
Mm-hmm. And he, in one of the incidences, apparently took almost a direct hit in his foxhole and ended the life of a strong leader. Since Veterans Day is coming up and the book is out, The Warrior's Silence, as I say, somewhat purgative for Dr. Elliott, what are some of the common problems experienced by today's returning vets? We hear PTSD, we hear all sorts of stories, but you were there, you have been through it. What are some of the problems that we need to be aware of when relatives, friends, loved ones come back and we don't understand?
Well, you know, as you've indicated in part of my book, veterans typically don't like to talk about it. And one of the reasons is that when you've had this experience and you come back, you know that something's changed in you. You know that something's different. But in my case and in many others, you're not really sure what that is. So you tend to withdraw and go inside. So for families, right, there's not a right answer. I think trying to, as I said before, expect that everything's going to be the same we pick up where we come off is not the right answer. I think being patient, listening, paying attention to what's going on, not trying to get them to talk about it. Yes, it's good, but if they don't want to do it, not pressing that. Now, the second thing, which just doesn't happen often enough, is that I think there's nothing better than...
If you would, Dr. Elliott, hold that thought. If you would, we're going to a break. We'll be back in a moment. We'll have more time on the other side. Can you stay with us for about another 10 minutes?
Absolutely.
Thank you. We're talking to Dr. Ord Elliott, author of The Warrior Silence, a debriefing of his time in combat in Vietnam. Back in a moment. Don't go away.
Stay right here. There's more news and views with Chuck Bates and you right here on the Information Radio Network. Now, here are more news and views with Chuck Bates.
Chuck is on assignment. I'm Ron Allen. It's Friday afternoon, and it is still news and views, friends. We're talking with Dr. Ord Elliott, the author of The Warrior's Silence. Dr. Elliott, as a Princeton grad and Marine Rifle Platoon commander in Vietnam, saw more combat than anyone needs to see. And he has written an experience about it some 30 years later to kind of debrief and to leave a message with some folks. And that message is there's a lot of returning veterans that are facing problems that need to be dealt with in a loving and compassionate way. Some of the problems you've talked about, Dr. Elliott, share with us, if you would, two or three of the major ones and why the veterans have difficulty talking about these experiences.
Well, I think in many cases it's hard to describe what they are. They were for me. I knew that something had changed, but I wasn't quite sure what that was. Frankly, writing about it for me was a way of pulling that out and getting some handle on what I had experienced. Some veterans that have read it have told me it's helped them find a voice, an ability to talk about what went on with them, because it is difficult to get a handle on.
How important is it for family members to have a clear picture of what the vet's been through? If they won't talk about it, how can a family member, a wife who's trying to readjust to the husband's presence, kids that have been without their dad for a year, two, three, whatever it might be, how important is it for families to have a clear picture of what he went through?
Well, I mean, you just have to know that they've been through something horrible and life-altering, and that probably they won't want to talk about it. So being patient, listening, paying attention is important. And one of the things that is less discussed and talked about is that it's wonderful if these younger vets could spend some time with an older vet when they come back. Many veterans don't want to go back to combat, but they say they want to be back with their old unit because of that mm-hmm. was their family.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so now they've got two families. You mentioned you had, Duran, relatives in World War II. I had an uncle that was in Iwo Jima in Korea. And, when I came back, I just spent time with him. We didn't necessarily talk about things, but I knew that he knew what I had been through. And I found that comforting. And that was sort of a halfway house for me to begin to, again, connect with my family, connect with work, and to get back on track.
Well, that's a real biblical mentoring model for you, too. That's an outstanding way to deal, and certainly they would understand. I guess probably if a veteran appears when he gets back, and I keep referring to he, the men, we now have women that go into combat, women pilots that have been injured and have come back missing limbs, some that have died, and I'm certainly not overlooking them. I should have been referencing them all along, but in the time you were in and World War II, there were not many women in combat, but we have them now. And how much more of a problem would it be for a woman to come back from that horror than a man, or would it be different?
Well, it's hard for me to speak for the other half in that, but I think we know in general there's an expectation that women are more nurturing and caring and the ones that tend to look out for the emotional life of the family. Well, if they come back, they're going to have the same. It's the same for everybody. And they're the ones that are going to need the nurturing and the emotional space and the caring. So it may be more difficult for them because culturally we don't support that model in the families.
What if a veteran comes back, hail fellow, well met, happy, seemingly, well adjusted, seemingly? Can the family relax, or is there something underneath that might surface or explode?
There's no time limit on that. The war can come back at any point. One of the stories in the book is I had my best squad leader, very best, came back, had a good career, good business, good marriage, kids, very happy. And 20 years later, he began hearing grenades in the battle return around him. And he took a shotgun and killed himself. Now, there was some warning because he was hearing, you know, talking about that and hearing it. So, obviously, you have to pay attention to those signals. But those can emerge really any time. There's no time limit.
I was pleased to see that your position, and it was not left to the imagination, your position on the politicians that make the wars should have to come out and fight the wars or send their own children out to fight them. You also found that CETO, the Southeast Atlantic Treaty Organization treaty, one of the several reasons for being involved in Southeast Asia, they termed them protocol signatories.
Yes, the Southeast Asian nations, of course, the NATO nations signed it, but those there, we basically said, we're going to protect you. But, of course, back then we had this doctrine of no change in free world or communist boundaries, the domino theory, and that sort of led a lot of the choices we made.
You were talking about your radio man. Was that, I forget, since I finished the book last night and my mind was a little vague on a couple of the facts at the end. Your radio man. Now, I think people have to understand that a radio man and a platoon commander are joined at the hip.
Absolutely.
Because I know we had the guys that carried the Prick 10 in our operation, they never got more than 2 feet away from the platoon commander. If they did, there was heck to pay. So, and when he died, was that the one that committed suicide later, or was that not?
No.
Okay.
My radio operator has PTSD. We talk all the time, and we're very close. He's my little brother. The other one that died later was also a platoon commander, a good friend. Had lost his legs in Vietnam, had an excellent business career, and later in life, late 50s, became a minister, caring for other people. And when Iraq and Afghanistan started, he was so traumatized by the loss of soldiers and Marines in these battles, he actually took a pistol and shot himself in the heart, out of the blue.
Hmm. Friends, you just need to make sure that your loved one that comes back from combat has your patience, has your love, has your devotion. Whether it's a man or a woman, they need to come back knowing that there is a nurturing environment for them. And on this Veterans Day coming up on Sunday, a perfect time to renew that. If you would, Doctor, and I refer to you as Dr. Elliott because it's hard to say Lieutenant after 30 years, but your whole life has just gone in an incredible direction. What is your message, sir, to a nation that is divided, as we've seen over the last several days, right down the middle with completely opposite moral and political philosophies? What is your message to this nation?
Well, it's very simple for me. We have troops on both sides of the fence politically. But my vote, particularly on Veterans Day, goes to the troops. They're the ones that are loyal, regardless of who's in charge, regardless of our political system. They're the ones that put their life on the line, and they go out there, and they work as a team every time, every time.
And on this Veterans Day, what would you say to a general population of the United States, sir?
To the general population? Well, I'm pleased that our troops are being accepted and praised today in a way that they weren't in Vietnam. I will continue to do that. And if you have a chance to spend some time with a veteran, do that. Spend some time. Tell him thank you.
Dr. Ord Elliott, thank you so much for being with us. The book is called The Warrior Silence. Friend, if you know anybody that's ever come back, old or young, and won't talk, get this book and put it in their hands. Thank you, Doctor. We appreciate your time on News and Views.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Ron.